Doesn't it feel good after a long, hard day just to put your feet up, lean back, and soak in another episode of Nashville Anthems, dissecting 80s and 90s country music? I'm your host and ever at your service, Melton McManerberry, and I want to give a big thank you to Deep Eufaula Daylight for playing us in today. On Nashville Anthems, we work hard to get to the bottom of exactly what it is that makes 80s and 90s country music particularly work. Through deep dives into the songs played on satellite radio's 80s and 90s country station, one at a time. And for a look at mid to late 90s specifically, there's definitely no better place to turn than to stratospheric superstar, Canada's own Shania Twain. We'll be looking at her 1998 hit, Honey, I'm Home. So if you haven't already, please go ahead and pause me now so that you can give Honey, I'm Home a good close listen or two. I'd also encourage you to break out our previous Shania Twain episode on From This Moment On and give it a listen, because similar to with other artists, we use that first encounter as an overall introduction to Shania Twain, so it'd be good to have some of that information in mind as we get into this specific one. Speaking of, let's do that. To start, we always want to give credit where credit is due, courtesy of your friend and mine, Wikipedia, with an assist from Billboard. As she usually did, Shania Twain co-wrote Honey, I'm Home with her then-husband and producer, the legendary Mutt Lange. The song then appeared as track 11 of 16 on easily the biggest country album of all time, 1997's Come On Over, an album we spent some time talking about in the From This Moment On episode. We won't repeat all that here, but suffice it to say, in terms of album sales, nothing in the history of country music is even close to Come On Over. It was not just a hit, but a cultural phenomenon, producing a whole slew of hit singles, including three U.S. country number ones, including Honey, I'm Home, and a whopping seven number ones in Twain's home country of Canada. In fact, actually, this is kind of hard to believe to me, but Honey, I'm Home was the final U.S. number one of Twain's career, at least as of this recording. That's more of a reflection of the brevity of Twain's commercial peak, intense though it may have been, than it is a signal of where we are in her career at this point, because in 1998, Shania Twain was indisputably on top of the country music world. So Come On Over had a bunch of singles released from it, Honey I'm Home being the fifth, and its predecessors being a bunch of songs you know, fellow U.S. number one, Love Gets Me Every Time, as well as Don't Be Stupid, mega hit You're Still the One, and previous Nashville Anthem selection From This Moment On. The next two singles were That Don't Impress Me Much and Man, I Feel Like a Woman, by the way. So you're getting the idea, right? This is the era that we're inside of in 1998. We kind of looked at it in the From This Moment On episode, but that's really a singular song doing its own kind of 90s stage drama diva thing. While I think Honey, I'm Home is much more representative of what Shania Twain and country music more broadly was doing in 1997 and 1998. So with that said, let's get into the song itself and find out at least what I'm hearing in Honey, I'm Home that makes the song what it is. So musically, I think the song is defined by two things. First, by the contrast between the Queen-style arena rock verse and the more honky-tonk-style country swing chorus. And second, by the idea of playing with the relationship between E blues and the specific chord pattern E, D, A, or 1, flat 7, 4. So let's take each of those in turn. First, there's a contrast between verse and chorus. We'll start with the verse, and really with this Queen-style arena rock beat that starts the song and carries through both verses. Now, the Queen reference is pretty hard to miss, but in case you did, here's the intro to Honey, I'm Home. Fiddles. And here's the intro to Queen's 1977 hit, We Will Rock You. And that's significant because the connection to arena rock is a big part of what Shania Twain was doing. Queen were a versatile band, don't get me wrong, but the idea of being big and of making music that played big is a lot of what tied their musical catalog together. And surely there's no better example of that than the intro and basic beat of We Will Rock You, which feels almost like a sporting event. It is so well tailored to energizing a large crowd. Watch the video for Honey, I'm Home, and you'll definitely see the connection. Much like Garth Brooks had done, Shania Twain channeled arena rock in terms of her stage presence for sure, and she made music that worked well in that setting, Honey, I'm Home being an excellent example. It is not a coincidence that Mutt Lange, who produced AC/DC and Def Leppard, co-wrote and produced Shania Twain's catalog during this era as well. It was unapologetic, it was fun, and it just worked, as it does on Honey, I'm Home.
don't stop, it's falling apart. I was late for work and the boss got smart.
So while that 1, 2, 3, and 4 beat persists through the verses, you also have these interesting strings showing up as this super young, super hip, super hot dancing violin trio in the video, but credited as a quartet in the liner notes. We'll get into more of what they played in a moment, but here let's acknowledge just what a perfect microcosm of the whole 1998 Shania Twain phenomenon these violins are. You have the nod to Honky Tonk Country, but it's 90s hip, with heavy effects in the production and just heavy attitude in the execution. You have also some lead electric guitar. And plus Twain's vocals, and that's really it. It's quite open, even sparse instrumentally. But what it lacks in texture, arguably, it makes up for in attitude.
Just so when I thought things couldn't get worse, I realized I forgot my words.
Now, back to this groove, because in addition to the bleacher kicking We Will Rock You rhythm, there is a subtle thing going on that becomes central when the song switches to double time in the chorus.
With all this stress, I must confess, this could be worse than PMS.
It's swing 16ths. So we've talked about swing, how it's basically unevenness in the subdivisions of beats, usually in the 8th notes. But sometimes songs swing not the 8th notes, but the 16th notes. And this is an example. Listen for the unevenness in the 4 notes between each beat in the verses of Honey I'm Home.
A broken nail open in the mail.
It's 1 E-N to 2 E-N to 3 E-N to 4 E-N to verses 1 E-N to 2 E-N to 3 E-N to 4 E-N to.
It's jobs of pain, it's so mundane, it sure don't stimulate my brain.
Swing 16ths have a tendency to show up in bigger songs with slow tempos. The quintessential example, at least in my mind, is Hey Jude. You can really hear it in the vocals in that song's long coda. Hear what I'm talking about? Here's the Honey I'm Home groove one more time for good measure. So hold on to that for just a second, because we'll come back to it when we get to the chorus. But I didn't want to skip over the party-style pre-chorus in Honey I'm Home. It forms a needed bridge between the stylistically very different verse and chorus, while also ramping up the group party atmosphere characteristic of arena rock, with the call and response "Haze" that are clearly, again, specifically tailor-made for the sorts of large arena concerts that Shania Twain was doing at the time.
Hey, honey, I'm on my way. Hey, 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 honey,
but let's get to the chorus, where we pivot from the arena to the honky-tonk. How's that for representative of the tension country music was wrestling with in general at this time? The biggest change is in the rhythm, as the song pulls a Billy the Kid in Smoky Mountain Rain and shifts to double time, two beats in the time that occupied one before, in other words. Twice the tempo, which in a sense doesn't change the tempo at all, kind of like doubling the frequency in a sense gives you back the same pitch. So when this happens, I won't say the energy of the song increases, in fact I might even argue it takes a step back, perhaps fitting for the subject matter of the song, but the kind of energy absolutely changes, as those swing 16ths we talked about keep swinging, but turn into eighth notes due to the double time shift.
Hey, 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 I'm home and I had a hard day.
They might think that swing eighths would feel similar to swing 16ths, but they don't. Certainly not in these two tempos. The up-tempo swing eighths in this chorus feel much, much less like arena rock. It's less crowd-friendly, if you will. Harder for a giant crowd to sing along with, much tighter, less expansive, just overall smaller feeling, as this protagonist really does kick up her feet to unwind and forget about the stress of her day. And these eighths really swing, by the way. The chorus is a straight-up shuffle, with the feel of a honky-tonk dance floor rather than the upper deck of a football stadium.
Fix me up, my.
The song also drastically changes texture from the sparseness of the verse. The drums get busier, the bass guitar moves more, doing more traditional country runs between the 1 and 5 chords that comprise the chorus, and I think quite significantly, a steel guitar shows up and starts playing fills.
Honey, I'm back, my head's killing me. I need to relax and watch TV.
Now that's a honky-tonk instrument, really the honky-tonk instrument. That wouldn't have made any sense in the verse, but fits right into this honky-tonk chorus. I do kind of want to throw the chorus of this song out there, the fast shuffle rhythm and the steel guitar in particular, and ask the naysayers, exactly why isn't this country? That's the kind of question I normally like to sidestep because I just want to enjoy the music, but I have to say, the common criticism of Shania Twain that she wasn't country is, for me, a little hard to square with a chorus like this. Without question, as we've just unpacked, this country chorus contrasts heavily and deliberately with the arena rock verse, violin-infused though it may have been, but I think if you're going to say those two things cancel out or whatever, you're going to have to wrestle with and probably say the same thing about Garth Brooks. Interesting how the one of that superstar pair who gets the most criticism for not being country enough or pure country enough is the woman and not the man, isn't it? By the way, I almost forgot to mention the other significant piece of the textural contrast between the verse and chorus, and that's the addition of harmony vocals. They're panned to opposite sides, too, which I find interesting. That effect seems to give the vocals a fuller sound, but moreover, it imports some of that crowd feeling into the chorus. It doesn't sound like three people crowded around a microphone, but more like a couple of people wandered into the recording session, felt the vibe, and just started singing along. If you want to listen for it, the high harmony, which is sung by a woman, I think probably Twain herself, is panned left, and the low harmony, which sounds like a man, probably Lang, is panned right. So that's the stylistic contrast between verse and chorus on this song that, for me, largely defines it. But now I want to dig a little deeper into what's going on harmonically, especially in intro and verse. And the aforementioned violins, as well as Twain's melody, are a good place to start here. We have a melody in the verse built around our familiar friend, E Blues. It starts with the very first note. It's really a chord with a B on top, but the G natural below the B is the melody note and immediately signals E blues harmony as it resolves down to that tonic note of E. Then there's another blue note, a D natural, leading into a D, E, B lick. Very E bluesy. Then after G, E again, the melody goes to A, A, G. Really sitting on that G natural, punching through with that blues attitude that we saw heavily on One Man Woman. And it kind of goes on from there with Twain's verse melody quickly beginning and mimicking the violin melody with lots of D naturals, E's, and G naturals. Listen to her land hard on the G natural as well when she goes down in pitch for the verse's sassiest vocal lick.
This could be worse than PMS.
All very E bluesy, right? Something we've seen many times before on this podcast. Right? Or is it? Now, there are really very few harmonic clues here in this intro and verse. As we mentioned, the arrangement being not exactly thin, but certainly sparse. There just isn't any sort of instrumental harmonic pad present to establish harmonic context. But as someone wise has said, the simplest solution is probably the right one. And E blues fits that bill, right? I think, yes, until you get to this part of the song. Here the two major stylistic personalities of this song merge, as you have the verse's big arena rock vibe set in the chorus's fast shuffle. Listen again, and if this rhythm and these chords seem familiar to you, there may be a good reason for that. Here's the guitar solo instrumental break of Honey, I'm Home. And here's a perhaps familiar to you shuffle from the same year as We Will Rock You. Same key and everything. Coincidence? I think not. It's not quite arena rock, but definitely what we'd call classic 70s rock that played well on a big stage. But don't stop there. The stacking vocal harmony at the end of this part, on that 5 chord that includes the dominant 7th, we've heard that before, too. It's an effective way to inject a little dramatic tension into a song with a party crowd atmosphere, right? But I'm seriously digressing. My point here isn't the style, but the harmony. E, D, A. That's 1, flat 7, 4. There's some E blues in there, with the D chord being out of key. But don't stop thinking about Tomorrow really isn't a bluesy song, nor is this guitar solo break in Honey, I'm Home. In both cases, it's all about the shuffle, with the chords flowing naturally, leaning on the circle of fifths, as the shuffle groove pushes right along. But what does that have to do with the verses? Well, want to have some fun? Here's the verse of Honey, I'm Home over an E chord.
I won't stop, it's falling apart. I was late for work and the boss got smart. My belly line shows, got a run on my hose. My hair went flat, man, I hate that.
And here's the verse of Honey, I'm Home over the chords of the instrumental break. E, D, A.
The car won't stop, it's falling apart. I was late for work and the boss got smart. My belly line shows, got around my hose. My hair went flat, man, I hate that.
It works, right? That instrumental break really ties the whole song together, with elements of the feel of both the verse and chorus, and pre-chorus for that matter, set in a harmony that we didn't realize at the time the verse was suggesting all along. E, D, A fits the blue notes really well, with the D notes often falling on the D chords, and the G notes often landing inside of A chords where they are the dominant sevenths, a much less dissonant tone in a major chord than a minor third. So there's some harmonic ambiguity in that verse after all. Not that there's anything wrong with a straight E blues melody, but I have to say the moment it hit me that the chords in the instrumental break had been suggested in the verse is the moment I got excited about this one musically. By the way, side note, almost everything that we've said so far about the content of Honey, I'm Home also applies to Twain's earlier hit, Any Man of Mine. So this is a tested and proven formula for Shania Twain, but I'll let you pull that one back out and listen for yourself. Let's move on, because obviously we have to talk about these provocative lyrics. And I say provocative, and it all seems a little quaint now, honestly, kind of like Twain's scandalous midriff bearing, right? As I'm recording this in 2024, culture seems to me to have largely moved on from all this. But at the time, that wasn't the case. And really, Shania Twain's popularity was itself such a cultural phenomenon that I think we can fairly credit her for the fact that she no longer feels shocking. But that these lyrics were at least intended as provocative for the time is readily apparent. Let's get into some of that. One of the things that's happening here lyrically is that, especially in the verses, Twain is naming some very specifically feminine ways in which her day is going wrong. Some of them fairly, shall we say, intimate. So we have her panty line showing, getting a run in her pantyhose, forgetting her purse, and then comparing it all to having PMS. And she mentions breaking a nail in the second verse and admits to cussing about it. Pretty frank, right? If you were looking for the stereotypical demure 50s housewife in a dress and pearls, you'll need to look somewhere else. That's not Shania Twain's image, and it's certainly not what this song is about. In fact, the song is pretty clearly self-consciously pushing against, even subversely reversing, that very image, as will become clear when we get to the chorus. By the way, let's not overlook the fact that she's working at all in this song. The whole context here is professional. You know, Melton's wife and I have been going back and watching the Mary Tyler Moore Show. And you watch that show now, and I'm not sure you think anything of the premise of centering the show around a professional single woman. But it was a big deal at the time, and Honey, I'm Home is closer chronologically to the Mary Tyler Moore Show than we are to Honey, I'm Home. So the shock factor in 1997, 1998 is very real. But there's something else going on here that I think is interesting. Because similar to our previous selection, actually very similar to our previous selection on the Judds' One Man Woman, Honey, I'm Home asserts 90s feminism, but more specifically, 90s feminism that celebrates a woman's freedom to be feminine. Major credit to Milton's wife for this insight, by the way, because sometimes feminism can feel less like real freedom and more like pressure to conform to some broader idea of what feminism is supposed to be, such that a woman can feel like she is, if you will, hurting the feminist cause or not towing the line if she complains about something like her hair being flat that day. It's like complaining about your own appearance is fueling the flames of oppression that women have fought to overcome. And there's some truth to that, right? But pressure to keep up the fight against oppression can be its own form of oppression. We made this observation in the One Man Woman episode, how Winona's empowered demand for the kind of man she wants had a touch of irony to it, because the relationship she was assertively demanding was exactly a mutually monogamous one. In other words, she was asserting her freedom to give her freedom up. And it does seem like Twain is doing something similar here, with these specifically feminine complaints about how her day is going wrong. Shania Twain has always been provocative, that's part of the appeal, but there's really another layer of provocative in this song, with some irony that would make fellow Canadian Alanis Morissette proud. Or maybe it would make her fix her own song, but that's another podcast. But there's more overt subversion going on here. It's primarily in the chorus. This is where Twain self-consciously gender reverses the stereotypical 50s breadwinning husband and bread-serving housewife. In Honey, I'm Home, the demand of One Man Woman that her husband would be waiting on her when she comes home from work is in fact realized. You can see Ward Cleaver coming home in his suit, relaxing in his den, while June takes a break from cooking dinner to hand him his evening paper and kiss him on the forehead, right? Clearly, that's the imagery that Honey, I'm Home's chorus is invoking. Hey, honey, I'm home, have a long day. Pour me cold water, oh, by the way. Even starting with the title and refrain, like a black and white sitcom, she announces, "Honey, I'm home." She talks about her hard day, but in a dismissive way. She doesn't want to talk about her hard day. She just mentions it more as an excuse for wanting to be left alone to watch TV in the other room, right? Left alone, except for the beer she wants Mud to bring to her, probably already opened, Archie and Edith Bunker style, her request for him to put her feet up, and of course, to cook and serve her dinner. Hard to miss what's happening here, right? It's not subtle. This is unapologetic 90s cultural subversion. And it actually feels less satirical than just funny. The whole thing is so over the top that it seems to be happening mostly for comedic effect. Although, you know, I'm honestly not sure what to do with the penultimate line in this chorus about putting up the phone and giving the dog a bone. Get off the phone, give the dog a bone. It certainly sounds suggestive, but what it sounds like it's suggesting doesn't necessarily make sense to me with the rest of the song. Maybe sometimes a bone is just a bone. But even that reference is kind of funny, right? The whole thing is a bit absurd. It's not absurd that a woman would come home and want to relax after a hard day while her husband cooks dinner. It's certainly not absurd at Casa Milton. The absurdity is in how over the top it is, and how it places this modern idea into a traditional situation. Kind of like really imagining Shania Twain, dressed like Shania Twain, sitting in Ward Cleaver's study. It's just funny to think about. And it makes me go back to something we talked about earlier in this episode, actually, about how authentic or not the countryside of this song's honky-tonk chorus is. And I'm walking back on something I said earlier, I know, but maybe there's something here. Because I have to admit, the whiplash effect of the stylistic contrast between verse and chorus, especially considering just how on-the-nose the chorus's country style is there a sense in which this chorus is poking fun at traditional country, like it's poking fun at traditional gender roles? You know, maybe. Not taking its countryness too seriously, or as too sacred, is something we've seen before in these songs. I think especially of the Dennis Lindy episodes, Bubba Shot the Jukebox and John Deere Green. Country music can have a tendency to wink at itself, or at least could in the 90s. So I, for one, am going to place that aspect of Honey, I'm Home in the good column. And if anything, for me, that makes it more country, not less. So that's what at least I'm hearing in Honey, I'm Home. But I do want to give an honorable mention here to something we didn't get into in this episode, because we talked about it a lot in the From This Moment On episode, but it's a huge part of why Honey, I'm Home works. And it's Shania Twain's charisma, particularly her vocal charisma. Few singers can pull an over-the-top, provocative song like this off without it sounding too much like a joke and crossing the line into camp. But Twain pulls it off. Her delivery is relatable and engaging. She has that vocal secret sauce that Garth has, and that George Strait has, although obviously manifested completely differently. So, let us not talk about why a Shania Twain song worked without acknowledging that Shania Twain's songs generally work because of, well, Shania Twain. But that's all I have to say about that. It's time now to find out what song we'll be looking at on the next episode of Nashville Anthems. To that end, I'm going to pull up Satellite Radio's 80s and 90s country station right now and see what's playing. All right, we're back to Brooks and Dunn once again, and the song is Lost and Found. I look forward to getting into that one with you in 2 weeks. In the meantime, you know where to find me. Just look for Nashville Anthems on Instagram or Facebook, and let's connect. Hey, thanks so much for listening. Don't forget to tell a friend about us. Bye now. I gotta go. I gotta get dinner started.